Hello, this is Tamiko Faithen, your host for Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. It's been a few months. Dr. Dugleen and I have been doing all of these things and more and have some other things going on that I won't talk about right now, but I'll come back and talk about in a monologue podcast. But for today, I'm just happy to be back. I'm happy to talk with a guest who I felt like I knew her. And then today when we started talking, I realized like we never have even had a conversation. I am so excited to announce that we have Dr. Nardia Aldridge for our podcast today. Our podcast focuses on showcasing therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color around the world and supporting them in their roles. So we want to support and showcase Dr. Nardia Aldridge. She is a native of the beautiful island of Jamaica and has served 9 years in the United States Army, where she met her husband, Roger Aldridge. They have been married for 21 years and have 2 children, Alyssa and Andrew. Dr. Aldridge has a PhD in health services, a MS in gerontology, and a BS in occupational therapy. Her expertise is in adult and geriatric care with a focus on long-term and subacute care. Dr. Aldridge has a passion for service. She takes students twice per year to Jamaica on a medical outreach trip to provide OT services to those without access to health care. Dr. Aldridge also serves locally by volunteering with organizations such as Samaritan's Purse and Heart to Heart Foundation. She is the president of the South Florida Black Occupational Therapy Caucus, which she reestablished as a charitable, not-for-profit organization within a year of relocating to Florida. Her areas of interest are diversity in occupational therapy, health promotion, health literacy, interprofessional activities, and community-based interventions that enhance the quality of life for mature adults. She avidly supports interdisciplinary approaches to client-centered care and her professional associations. Dr. Aldridge has presented at multiple conferences locally, nationally, and internationally about diversity, implicit bias, and health literacy in the profession. Welcome, Dr. Aldridge.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We want to get into our interview now and just talk about how you became interested in occupational therapy. Can you walk us through that journey?
Sure. I was one of those privileged individuals, I would say, that learned about occupational therapy while I was in high school. I went to high school in New York, and it was a vocational program. So each program, whether you were in cosmetology, accounting, medical assisting, and I think there was also fashion, you had to go and shadow with different professionals. So I had the opportunity to go into different hospital settings and shadow different health professionals so I could decide as to where I wanted to be professionally. And I had the opportunity to shadow PT, OT, nursing, as well as the physician. And I thought I wanted nursing at first, but of course, when I shadowed the nursing, unfortunately, they were so stressed. They were overwhelmed with their day and everything that they were doing. The doctors were moving too quickly for me with their interactions with the patients. And as far as the physical therapy, I just saw it was just too repetitive for me as what they were doing. And then I saw the occupational therapist and I was in love. They were working with a client who had a stroke and was teaching the client how to feed himself again using adaptive equipment. And of course, being in high school, and I think I was probably about 15, 16 years old at the time, I didn't know the profession existed. And I was asking the occupational therapist about why are you feeding him, teaching him to feed himself? If it's so difficult for him, why can't a CNA or, you know, a family member do it for him? And she explained how the goal is for him to be as independent as possible and to be able to do everything that he would like to do and did previously to the best of his ability. So I was very intrigued by that. And I decided I was going to do that. But out of high school, I received a scholarship for psychology. So I thought, okay, I'll be a psychologist. So I put OT on the back burner for one semester. But as I took the psych courses and I fell in love with it, and I learned even while taking my psych courses more about occupational therapy and realized I could still do both. So I decided to go down that path and I changed my major from psychology and changed the school, gave up my scholarship, changed school and pursued occupational therapy. And what is it, 21 years later, I am very happy about that decision.
Oh, this is a great story. One, that you got introduced to occupational therapy in high school. Can we bring that back?
Yes.
Have, you know, an opportunity to actually see other professionals working while they're making these big decisions about college.
Yes.
The other thing that really stood out in your story is that you gave up your scholarship to do something that you love. And I am one who, if you follow me, know that I talk a lot about money and wealth and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth generation and financial management and so forth. I also believe that money follows service and passion. And so when you're making decisions, you really have to think about what it is that you really, really want to do.
Yes.
And you realize that above having free education through the scholarship, it was more important for you to work in a field that you loved, that you, like you said, I fell in love with it, you know, fell in love with it in high school. And I, you know, don't want to get in your business, but I'm sure you make a great income in your work as you, you know, become a leader in multiple spaces.
Yes. So of course, being in education, in academia, you don't make as much as you previously did. But my career prior to becoming an educator, while I lived in New York, I was director of rehab in a skilled nursing facility. And yes, that was the height in terms of income wise, what I was able to make. But I never thought or worried about income, because once I got into the field, once I graduated from OT school and started working, you know, salary was great. And you had that opportunity to progress from being, you know, just the regular OT to supervisor. And then, of course, after I got my master's degree in gerontology, I was offered the opportunity to be the director of rehab in that skilled nursing facility, overseeing PT, OT, speech and audiology. So the financial aspect came into play. But transitioning from New York to Florida and transitioning from the clinic to academia was a challenge as well. But that's another time where I gave up the financial component to pursue my passion.
Mm. And you have no regrets?
No regrets at all.
That's awesome. Okay, so you
love what I do.
That's awesome. And you became a leader. You became a leader. It sounds like in the clinic space.
Yes.
And now you're a leader in academia. And, you know, we talked about being an introvert and extrovert as leaders and things like that before this show. And you were saying you're an introvert, and I said I'm an extreme introvert. And we were just talking about, you don't have to be an extrovert to be a leader. There's different forms of leadership. There's informal leaders, there are formal leaders, and there's different personality types in leadership. Can you talk about, especially with you saying, you know, I'm an introvert, how you moved into these leadership roles?
Okay. Yes. So yes. People will see me and they don't think that I am an introvert, but I truly am. I like being by myself a lot. I like my own space, being quiet and everything. I like doing things behind the scenes as well. But in terms of leadership, it seems to always be, not that I'm seeking out those positions or those opportunities, but people will come to me. And they will say, you know, Nardi, I think, you know, you'll be great at this, or they would encourage me to take on such a role. My leadership began out of high school when I joined the Army, the United States Army, at the age of 17. So I served there for 9 years. And of course, in the Army, you learned to become a leader instantly because you had no choice. You had to step into those leadership roles. But from that, it just gave me the confidence to know that I can lead others, and they don't have to be, they can be older than I am, because that was one situation. You're leading individuals who may be older than you are. You're leading individuals who may be more experienced than you are. And I think sometimes as a Black woman, for me, that was a little bit challenging at times. And at times I doubted myself as to whether or not that was possible. But thank God I was surrounded by people who would always encourage me and say, Nardia, you got this. Nardia, we know your skill set. We have seen how you operate and we think you can do this. So because of that, that gave me the confidence to continue with. And to say yes, that's the other thing, is being saying yes to those leadership opportunities, because sometimes opportunities come up and our self-doubt may hinder us. But saying yes to opportunities, even if you're not sure how it's going to take place or what it may look like, is another thing that I do. So I do push myself outside of my comfort zone. At times, I had a time in my life when I had, I'm not sure if you read the book, A Year of Yes by Shonda Rhimes.
I have not, but I add that to my Audible list.
Yes, so it was A Year of Yes for me, and I read the book and it inspired me to just say yes to opportunities. And I had my whole year of yes, where anything that came up, I was going to say yes, no matter what it would be. And I dragged a colleague, Dr. Clover Hutchinson from New York, along with me in that journey. And it was just a great time. And it even pushed me. That's when I did my first presentation in Australia, which was way, way outside of my comfort zone. And I was presenting to physicians, not even occupational therapists. I was presenting to physicians out there regarding adult day service centers and the impact and the importance of it. So I think overall, yes, being an introvert, I definitely am, but I do force myself and push myself to step outside of my comfort zone and just say yes to opportunities when they come along, as long as I'm not going to burn myself out too much.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, Nardia. I was going to ask about how you maintain the balance, especially that year that you decided, I want to say yes to everything, no matter what it is. I'm so curious now about this book. How did you maintain, I'm kind of going off our previous experience, how did you maintain balance when you were saying yes to these opportunities, particularly when these were opportunities and also pushing you outside of your comfort zone?
Yes. So saying yes to the opportunities, was the first step. And then in terms of the balance, then I was able to schedule myself accordingly. So I had that year of yes. And then the following year was completing those commitments or following up on those commitments. So whatever it was that I said yes to, so I would say yes, yes, yes. And then I would schedule myself accordingly, depending on prioritize, right? What was more important to get done within that moment versus something that could wait. Then the following year, I was not saying yes to things. I was just fulfilling my commitments. And that was how I was able to find that balance. And after that, then I had my year of no. where I, you know, I'm a strong believer in saying no without an explanation. Mm. Well, there were times when things come up and my answer was just no and period, end of story. And I didn't feel like the need to explain or anything, because I knew within myself what I was trying to accomplish and get done. And sometimes we do have to say no, because that burnout is real. I'm sure you know it. And then I have my children, I have my family, right? My husband, and I never wanted to be that. I'm so involved in everything else around me and not getting that time that I need with my family.
Yeah, thank you for that. I love the, you know, you said yes, you scheduled, you prioritized, and then you had a time of no, and you said no without explanation, period.
Yes.
I don't have to explain to you why I'm saying that no. And I know, at least for me and probably some of our listeners, sometimes we feel guilty if we, you know, say no to something and we feel like we need to add an explanation. But I'm going to take those words of wisdom and apply those. No without an explanation. You can't.
Okay, they say no is a complete sentence, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That is right. Okay,
yeah, so no, what is a complete sentence?
Exactly. So what are those entrepreneurial and leadership? I read those in the bio, but can you say some about your leadership in academia and then in the entrepreneurial space? Because you're a leader in both of those spaces.
Sure, yes. So the leadership started in terms of the occupational therapy profession. It started with the National Black Occupational Therapy Caucus, primarily the New York State chapter. As a student, I received a scholarship from the New York State Black Occupational Therapy Caucus. It's the Dolores B. Chandler Scholarship, one of the founding members of the National Black OT Caucus. I believe that was about 99 or 2000 I received that scholarship. And I felt an obligation to give back to the profession and to give back to that organization. So I joined, of course, I became a member. And right after joining, I was shadowing the president who was in the position at that time. I believe I received the scholarship December. I started shadowing her like February. And by April, I was the new president of the organization because she stepped out of the role. I stepped into it and I became president of the New York State Black Occupational Therapy Caucus. And I served in that position for almost 16 years, I would say, as president for that chapter, and got us our 501c3, making sure that everything was set up financially and increased in terms of membership just for the sustainability of the organization, because I knew the benefit of the organization. One of the biggest thing was just having some place to go or people that you can be connected to and feel safe around when you're going through things. As I mentioned, I was director of rehab in a skilled nursing facilities, and there were times when on my door, it would clearly say Nardi Aldridge, director of rehab, and it's a single office. There's no other space behind me. And I would have individuals come to that space and ask me, are you Nardi Aldridge secretary? And at times I would say yes and just go with it, because it was just so frustrating to have to constantly say, no, I am Nardi Aldridge, director of rehab. And there were other times that I would correct them in the moment. But sometimes we face so many challenges at work and we're not sure, or we question ourselves, am I overreacting? Mm-hmm. Am I taking this too, you know, taking this too serious? Is it me? Or, you know, did they really say something that's racist, or, you know, that implicit bias? And just having the new members of the New York State Black OT Caucus to be able to just go to and express what I experienced and to get some confirmation, or for them to say, yeah, I think that one may be a little bit out there, Nardi, whatever it may be. But just having that support and networking was critical for me. And then I transitioned here to South Florida 7 years ago, and I reached out to Dr. Sandy Dunbar, who is a member of the National Black OT Caucus, but I reached out to her to see if there was a chapter in Florida. And she said there used to be one, but it no longer exists. And having had that experience that I had in New York, I knew the importance of the organization. So then I started the South Florida Black OT Caucus with just three members. And, you know, we have grown since then. And just being able to provide, same thing, provide a scholarship to students, to provide that mentorship, to provide the networking that they need, because I'm sure, as you know from the statistics, that there are very few of us in the profession. And when you're in school, it's very difficult when you look around the room and you may be the only one, or you may be two of 30 or whatever the cohort size is. And just knowing that there's a group out there that can support you and encourage you is very important. So that's how I stepped into those leadership role. And then within the academia arena, just being there for the students, a lot of people see me in there as a leader, and what I'm doing in terms of research, which all stemmed from my student, you know, that summer when, unfortunately, George Floyd was brutally murdered. And, you know, we had the Breonna Taylor and everyone. And the students were struggling because they were maybe two of, you know, we had, I think at the time it was, let's say, 54 in the cohort. And you may only have two or three students who are Black. And they just didn't know how to express themselves and the challenges they were facing. And they started questioning me about how other students were feeling, and I didn't have an answer, and whether or not their what they were going through were unique to them. So we decided to, I said, well, let's research it. So they signed up for me for their research group, and we started exploring the lived experiences of Black OT students and practitioners. And then we looked at the OTA students and practitioners. And now I'm looking at the Black faculty and leader experience with systemic racism within academia. So that's how that came about. So it's just been a journey of, as I mentioned, either I'm encouraged in the role or I just feel like I need to give back to the profession and to people who have been there for me. And, you know, we have all these great individuals on their shoulders that we stand on, right? And then I need to be there for somebody else to stand on as well.
Well, thank you, Nadia. I have so many thank yous for you. Thank you. First, I didn't say earlier, thank you for your service in, you know, in the Army. Thank you for your leadership with the Black OT chapters. And you have also been very helpful for the North Carolina Black OT caucus that we started last year. So thank you for that and continuing to be available for us and probably other chapters as well. And thank you for the research. That research is needed, and I'm glad to see you and others being proactive in terms of researching so that we can have more information about these experiences and are more proactive about ways to deal with the experiences.
Yes, you are most welcome.
Okay, I think we kind of got into some of the responses for a couple of the other questions about being, you know, a person of color in our profession, that the percentage is low in terms of the number of people of color, particularly Black and people who identify as Latinx or Latina. Yes. I think on this last workforce survey, we barely moved. I was anticipating a big jump from the 4%. I think it was 4% in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm seeing this new survey that just came out, and I'm like, it looks almost the same.
Yes, I think, what is it, like 4.3 now?
right. It looks almost the same. I'm like, the needle is barely moving. I'm still hopeful that I feel like I see more representation in student bodies, at least in North Carolina. I can't speak for other yes. states, but I see more representation. So I'm hopeful at some point we can see this survey change and our demographic and representation changes in the profession. So you spoke to a little bit about, you know, they calling you the secretary and you're like, you're so tired of it. You're just like, okay, yeah, I'm the secretary because I'm sick of having to answer this question over and over again. How does that impact you? I mean, obviously it's impacted you to say, I'm going to lead and I'm going to create spaces for others. Any other experiences you want to speak to related to the impact of being a Black woman in this profession?
So the challenge is that, you know, you will have these experiences and then what do you do about it? Right? Because we can talk all day long about all the different experiences we have had, right? As Black women, as people of color, whatever it may be, as marginalized populations. But I always ask, and it's the same thing I will ask my students now, well, what are you going to do about it? You know, what does it mean for you? And for me, I really take that quote about being the change you want to see. Mm-hmm. I've made it my personal mantra for myself. And that's what I've done, is just being the change I want to see. So I have to be the one to, one, step into those leadership roles. So students can see that we're out there and see who we are and the importance of that. I remember in New York, I would always go to the conference and I would hear all these different individuals being awarded different awards, right? Mm-hmm. And I would think, well, why aren't there any Black people getting awards? And I sat with my colleague, Clover Hutchinson, and we really looked and we said, it seems like they're just nominating each other. So then we said, well, let's nominate each other, right? And we mm-hmm. went back to the New York State Black OT Caucus and we looked at different individuals who would qualify for certain awards and we started nominating. And guess what? They started getting awards. so sometimes we have to do some of those groundwork. And I think, unfortunately, not everyone is willing to do that. But we have to be the ones to make the change sometimes. And same thing with, we say, well, we don't have a voice and how do you get your point across? Well, sit on the board, right? And that's exactly what we did. We started volunteering for those board positions or applying for it, and then being able to serve on your state association board or with AOT or wherever, then this gives you a voice. It gives you that opportunity to voice whatever challenges you're going on, whatever challenges you're going through, but also to help come up with some solutions and things that may be viable. And that's just been the approach that I've taken. So yes, I've been through a lot throughout my life as a Black woman in OT space, as well as even in the military. But I always say to myself, well, what am I going to do to make it different for someone else coming up? The same thing goes with, you mentioned the numbers, you know, our representation in the occupational therapy profession is very low. It's, you know, 4%, or if we want to say less than 5%. But what are we doing to help to make that change? So part of what we do through the different chapters of the Black OT Caucus is go into those middle schools, go into those high schools or even elementary school and presenting about occupational therapy, educating them that this profession exists. Because many times when I do interviews for students coming into our programs, and when you ask how did they learn about OT, many times it was a family member who received OT services, or as children they received OT services. But these were always the white individuals who are stayed in this. The Black students are the Hispanic students, or so they never had that experience or exposure for someone to in their family to have had it, whether it's due to access or whatever the different type of access, whether it's financially or just location wise, that it may be. That's the challenge. And in school, you know, we're only hearing about, oh, become a doctor, become a lawyer, become a teacher, become this, but you never hear anyone say become an occupational therapist. So we have to take that onus and that ownership and make the time and volunteer at our children's school and share the word and go to career days and share the word about occupational therapy and what we do. So that's how I have been able to get through my difficult situations, is just being the change I want to see.
Yeah, you have a very positive outlook and you're action oriented. And, you know, I feel like, yeah, there's definitely a space for, you know, in time for sometimes for venting, but I'm with you on that. Okay, now you got all that out. Now what's next?
You know, we can't stay in that space forever.
Stay there forever. You know, we have choices, and we can, like you said, you can be the change that you want to see, and that requires a willingness to step out sometimes and lead like you're doing. So I think that's one piece of advice. What other advice would you give people of color seeking to go into either entrepreneurship, which we really didn't talk much about. So we maybe talk about your entrepreneurial endeavor, and then advice about folks who want to go into entrepreneurship or leadership.
Yes, sure. So in terms of entrepreneurship, my passion project, as I like to call it now, is Tati Social Club. Tati Social Club, it's made up of the Caribbean mature adults, but it's not solely for them, but that's who I created it for, based on my mom. And it's just to give these individuals an opportunity to get together with like-minded folks and to have that opportunity to share, whether it's just sharing stories, sharing a meal, playing cultural games and things like that. That's what the organization was set up for. So my mom, she passed in October of 2019. So just last week, I was going through a rough time dealing with that. But my mom is from Jamaica, and being here in the US and culturally, we do not believe in necessarily like senior centers and nursing homes, right? And things like that. Usually your family member, they stay with you, you're caring for them, you're doing everything. But my mom was very sick, but outside of being sick, she wasn't going to anything. And we know as occupational therapists how important leisure activity is for our mature adults and for them to be engaged and that connection. And she was missing that component. And when I encouraged her, I mean, she lived in a senior housing community where they had a senior center downstairs, But when I would encourage her to go, she would say, no, it's boring and it's for old people. Of course, she did not consider herself old in her 60s, right? So that led to me searching to see what are some options for the Caribbean mature adults who will not go to a senior center, even if they have great activities. They will not go. And I didn't see it. It didn't exist in New York. And I moved here to Florida and I did my research and it was the same thing. It did not exist. So I decided I was going to create it. You know me. if I need it and I don't see it, I'm going to create it. So I created Tati Social Club as a way to honor my mom. And what takes place now with that is I have, right now it's happening at my home. So the last Saturday of every month, we have a potluck and game night. And we have anywhere from 7 to 20 mature adults, and they come and they're playing the cultural games. They bring their different cultural foods. We have conversations about the food, the music, the culture, and it's just a great time. Other than that, we are going to the different museums, and sometimes some of them make just send a message and said, you know, we want to go out to dinner tonight. I don't have anybody who wants to go out. And a group of them get together and go out for a dinner or a movie or things like that. So it's just providing that connection and support with like-minded individual where they can go and enjoy themselves and not feel like they're in a senior citizen center per se. And my vision has not fully come to fruition with it because I would love to have a space, but still a home-like environment where they do not feel like they're going to a senior center. But instead of my home, I would like to have a home-like environment out in the community where they're still able to come and get access to all those things that I just mentioned. So that's the entrepreneur piece.
Hey, that sounds like a lot of fun. I was saying before the show to Nardi that if I lived in Florida, I don't know if I would be allowed to come or not, but I would want to come to it because it looks like a lot of fun.
It is, but I will tell you, even though it's created for the mature adult, people come. I have people that come, they're in their 30s and their 40s because they come bringing mom, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're having so much fun. They're like, no, I'm staying.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was like, I don't know if I meet the age. I'm approaching it, but I'm not there yet.
Yes, I've had to make the change where it's not just the mature adults. And then the other component to it, so there's definitely that need because for the individual who's in their 40s or even that those late 30s, where they're Christians and they're not out there in the club anymore, right? They're mm-hmm. not going to the bars and stuff. Well, what are they doing for fun, right? And that's one. So that's fulfilling that need for them where they know they come. It's a safe space and they come, they interact, and that multi-generational as well as intergenerational collaboration is just fantastic and the discussions are amazing. So yes, it was created for the Caribbean mature adults, but I have non-Caribbeans and I have younger people as well. So I would say the age span right now is from 34. I think that's the youngest person that I've had here up to 82.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. I mean, that's occupational therapy. You know, we always talk about the environment and how important the social environment is. So you're doing OT in your entrepreneurial endeavor and honoring your mother and bringing people together.
Yes, definitely. Yes. So I'm looking more into that lifestyle redesign, right? That's the new terminology that they have. And I think that's definitely a connection with that. So as I expound on that aspect, that's where I'm going to be getting most of my research and evidence that I need to continue to support this endeavor. But yes, that's my passion project and my entrepreneurship component, which I do not consider myself an entrepreneur.
You're an entrepreneur and an intrapreneur because you're innovating in your space in academia.
Yes.
And you're starting all this stuff. I mean, all these innovative opportunities.
So yes.
I see you as an intrapreneur, an entrepreneur, and a leader.
Yes, thank you for that, Tamika. I appreciate it. And then the second part of your question was in terms of what advice would I give. I say go for it. I say go after that passion, even if you may not see the income right away, because we know, and I'm sure you have had that experience. Initially, you're probably not going to make the money. You're probably spending more money getting started and getting things off the ground. But once you're pursuing that passion and you're serving, and I think that's the other component of it, we don't realize how important service is. And when people see that you really have a heart of service, they will go out of their way to help you because they know you're not doing it out of selfishness, right? They know you're doing it to serve and to help someone. So that has been beneficial to me, where people just volunteer to assist. Even for me to start my company, my neighbor, when I shared with her, she's from the Bahamas, and I shared with her and she said, oh, I am a legal aid. I can help you with starting up the organization, you know, do the paperwork for you and everything like that. And then somebody else will volunteer something. So I think those things are important. So I always say, take that first step. Step outside of your comfort zone. And I do truly believe that everything else will fall into place. But you do have to take the first step and say yes to the opportunity and just step outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, you have to start. Like you said, in the beginning, I mean, it's very common that for the first 3 years, businesses don't make money. I think in OT, you can there's opportunity to make money before 3 years, but it is not uncommon just in general for businesses to lose or they operate in the red. Now, after 3 years, they call it a hobby. If it's not making any money, but you have to start and you have to be willing to take
it. You have to start, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so what is next for Nardia and how can we support you in whatever is next for you?
Let's see, what's next for Nardia? I don't know. Well, definitely I am going to continue to serve in every capacity that I can. As you know, I am one part of the leadership aspect that I didn't mention is that I'm the Eastern member at large for the National Black OT Caucus. So my role, my primary role or my goal with that when I applied for that position was to increase the number of chapters throughout the United States. Because we only have a few that are active in the various states. And I want to ensure my personal goal is that every state would have at least one chapter, because as this profession continues to grow and as we work on that recruitment, retention, and registration rates for Black occupational therapists, we want to make sure they have that safe space that I have been provided with, whether it was in New York or here in Florida. So this is why when, you know, you mentioned North Carolina, chapter started in South Carolina, started. Texas is in the process of getting off the ground. Connecticut has started, and Pennsylvania, they just contacted me last week. Georgia is also in the process. So just being able to help those chapters get up and going is important to me because I know the value of the chapters and how it provides that networking and support that we all need. So that would be my goal number one, is making sure or working on ensuring that we do have a chapter in every state. So how you all could help, yes, is definitely if you're an occupational therapist and practitioner or you're an OT student and you're in a state where there is no Black OT caucus, reach out to me and let's see about getting started. The caveat to that is you may have to be the one to step into that leadership role to get it going. You may have to be the president or, you know, the secretary or the treasurer. Normally we want at least three individuals to start it up. And then as you recruit, then hopefully you're able to get other people to step into leadership role and you don't have to carry that burden. But just know that I'm here to support you in whatever that may be for your chapter. And then the other component is with my Tautis Social Club. As I mentioned, I would love to be able to get that physical space to be able to have where they don't have to come to my home. I enjoy having at my home, but because it is at my home, I do limit the amount of people who come. And I also limit who comes, right? Because so I can't necessarily put out as much promotion and social media as I would like, because they're coming into my private space, right? However, if I had some place that they could go, then I wouldn't have to worry about that. And I could promote as much as I would like and even get more individuals and meet a greater need, because we know we have these individuals who are home, especially post-COVID, who they're still home. They haven't gone out as much as they should. They're not interacting as much as they should. And I want to be able to assist in that way. So those are my two top things that I'm working on in terms of what's next for Nardia.
Okay. And what part of Florida you're in? So if you're listening and you hear what part of Florida she's in.
I am in South Florida.
South Florida. Okay. Yeah. So if you're listening and you're in South Florida, or if you know spaces in South Florida that you can share with Nardia, please, please do so. All right. Last pearl of wisdom or quote. And I love that the scripture that you posted, I think I messaged this to you, inspires me so much to see that you post that consistently on social media. I appreciate it. It feeds my soul to see those posts. What quote or word of wisdom would you like to leave with our audience as we're wrapping up?
Yes. The first one is going to still be being the change you want to see. I think that is definitely of utmost importance with that. And one quote, I'm going to share with you my family model for my children, my husband and myself. When we started having children, we decided on a family model, and it is, we don't meet the standards, we exceed them. And I would like to share that with everyone that's listening, not to just meet the standards, but exceed them, because as a Black person, as a person of color, you cannot just be the status quo. You cannot be average. You have to exceed those standards in order to get to the space where you want to be. I am praying and I'm hopeful that down the line in the near future, you won't have to work 10 times harder and you don't have to exceed the standards, that it's okay to meet them. But right now in our current climate where we are, don't just meet the standards, exceed them and follow your dreams.
I will say snap. If you can see me, you can't see me because I'm on podcast. Snapping, facts, hashtag, mic drop on that one, because you can. It's just the way it is right now.
Like, it's just our reality.
It's the reality. You have to go above and beyond. And yes, you may not even when you're doing that, you may not get recognized.
Oh, exactly.
For service, and you do it from the heart, and you do it because you want to be that change. Eventually, maybe there will be recognition, but you can't do it for the recognition, because there are plenty of people that I know who have Black and brown faces that are doing a lot. They don't get the same recognition as other people. So do nominate. I know you mentioned that earlier, too. That's something that I've been very intentional about recently, is making those nominations for people who are underrepresented and are not getting awards and should be. So we have, yes, we are taking the initiative to nominate others.
Yes, nominate others, celebrate each other, celebrate others. You know, anything that you can do to help each other is important. That's why I said that heart of service is very important. And we have to recognize each other and celebrate each other.
Well, thank you, Nardia. I ditto all of it, and I'm just so thankful that you are an occupational therapy practitioner, a leader, a Black woman, a person who's supporting the caucuses and researching. So I'm grateful for you. My heart is full, and I look forward to supporting however we can you in these different roles. And that's our show for today. Thank you again for being here.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Y'all don't forget to follow. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.